responsibility is so good. It feels so natural.
What's something you've written and you've just gone, I can't know?
You can look at it and kind of try and learn from the things you've been through.
You write songs, right?
I've read that a few times too. I know, we've sold that many records.
This week on The Best Bits, Cherie Curry, the powerhouse vocalist out the front of all-female group The Runaways, joined me. She's in the country for the first time playing her own shows. She spoke about that turbulent period and something else she's known for, her work as a chainsaw woodwork artist. Also, have you ever failed at something and struggled to see the positive outcome? Simone Sheridan is the creative producer of Failure Lab, which is a performance event celebrating failure as an important step to success. You also shared some of your own failings, which was quite comforting. We also met our feature artist, Danone. Her electronic record, Hopelessness, is a departure from the sparse beauty of Anthony and the Johnsons, but maintains who she is as an artist, a unique, compelling voice that challenges us to think more deeply about the impact we're having on the planet and each other.
It's only 4 degrees, it's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees, it's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees, it's only
4 degrees. Now to meet someone who's making art not only like you probably haven't heard before, it is not like anything you've heard from her before. I'm talking about Anoni and the new album, Hopelessness. It's an extraordinary album. It's not only musically spectacular and quite dense, it engages a wider conversation about issues that are affecting our planet right now. It's intense, it's brutal, it's political, and she's also here in the country to perform some very different shows than the ones you might be used to if you've ever been to an Anthony and the Johnsons gig, which I'm sure you have at some point, because she's been making music for a long, long time. But this new show is apparently quite extraordinary. It's getting rave reviews in New York. Only two have been staged, I think, and one of the reviewers said that the show brought New York to a standstill.
The show is still early days with it, really. We're just trying it out for size. You know, it was a big kind of concept. And
yeah, tell me about the concept of the show.
It's quite Spartan in a way. I spent some time filming portraits of a group of women from many different walks of life, singing songs, lip-syncing songs, and I perform in the shadow of that film. It's hard to know exactly what its impact is, but it's striking.
It certainly is. Well, I've seen the clip, obviously, for Drone Bomb Me with Naomi Campbell, where she is doing part of that. She features in the show as well.
The clip, the footage of Naomi is the only footage that I didn't film initially for the concert, but rather we created a music video with a filmmaker named Nabil, who actually hails from Australia. And then I used some of the footage from that session to create a video that would play while I perform the song live as well.
Great. Well, we can't wait to see it here in Australia. I think people are very, very excited. But also equally as excited, not just because you do a magnificent show, as we saw last year at Mona when you played Dark Mofo.
This concert is very, very different in its content and in its approach. It's much less personable in a way. And the material itself is much thornier. Yeah. So it's, I wouldn't come to the show expecting to see the pastoral kind of symphonic work that I've done in the past. It's a bit edgier than that.
Well, that's the thing. The new album is extraordinary, incredible. And you blew everybody away when you released it. All of a sudden it was this huge sound, but not only was it this huge sound and a real depth to the production, lyrically I feel like you've you've just moved in a completely different direction. Do you want to tell me about the germination of the ideas behind Hopelessness?
In making this record, I wanted to challenge myself to participate in a very vigorous and transparent way in like a topical conversation about what's happening in our world, rather than participating in the way that I have in the past in a more kind of opaque, kind of poetic way. I wanted to use more vigorous language and explore my sphere of influence in terms of how actively I could participate in a conversation or provoke very specific lines of thought, subjects that are affecting us on a day-to-day basis, to see if I could hold space in an album for a whole panorama of issues rather than just one or two things, and try to explore the interconnectedness between those issues and, as an artist, utilize my, you know, knack for like emotional, intuitive expression and connectivity. I chose to make an electronic record, work with Hudson Mohawk and Dan Lopatin, one whose group's name is 103.never, because I wanted this record to have a much more contemporary sound. I felt like the sound of my past records, it's very pretty, and but in some regards, it was beginning to feel, at least in this moment, it was feeling too passive, almost antiquated in a way. It wasn't as direct as I wanted it to be in this moment. So I wanted to, you know, I reached for a more pop sound. You know, I've called this record a sort of a Trojan horse. I packaged it in a way that was very immediate, had a very immediate kind of appeal to the ear, and then tried to embed within it lyrically frank concerns, at least of my day, you know.
Yeah.
It was an experiment in many regards. Making this record felt quite experimental to me. Not that the sound of the record is particularly experimental. It's almost like quite a poppy record, but the content of the record stands in contrast to that. And I had no idea how it would be received, and, you know, it's been received in a bunch of different ways.
Blow me from the mountains and into the sea. Blow me from the side of the mountain. Blow my head off. Explode my crystal guts. Lay my purple on the grass.
New music on Double J. After 22 years, the Stone Roses are back with All For One. And the fun and funky old school from Metronomy. There's lots of new music, and you can see the full list at doublej.net.au.
Miff's best bits on Double J.
Miff here with you, and I'm talking to you today about failure. It's kind of a favourite topic of mine because I do believe, even though sometimes it can be the most humiliating and awful and gut-wrenching experience, quite often you learn from your failures a lot more than you do from your success. I mean, when you're having a successful time, you're up there and it's all nice and everyone's telling you how great you are, but when you fail, that's when you really have to question your kind of heart and soul and why you're doing what you do. And you've been so generous with your texts. It's been quite incredible. The number is 0408 345 555. Casey on the Gold Coast has said, as a pastry chef and now a cake decorator, unfortunately, sometimes the only way to learn is from my failures or mistakes, although failures are time and money, which makes it tough. And Lib has got hilarious stories about failure in her family. Clearly it runs in it. My auntie Kay worked in a milk bar when she was young. She was sacked for leaving the snow cone machine turned on. The next morning there was ice all over the floor. Oh no. God, I laughed, says Lib. I got sacked from a deli. We can't work with food. At least you've learnt that you can't work with food, Lib. That's good to know. But let's go deeper into that idea of failure. Does failure hold us back, and does it get in the way of achieving what we can if we're so scared of it? We are about to find out, because in the studio, Simone Sheridan, who's hosting an evening that's all about celebrating failure happening this weekend in Sydney called the Failure Lab, is with us. Hello.
Hello.
Nice of you to join me.
Thanks for having me.
Why did you want to do this, a night about failure? I love it. I'm actually quite excited by the idea, because everything's all positivity and aren't we blessed? Hashtag blessed. And,
yes.
You know, all that.
Winning.
winning it.
Yeah,
yep.
Winning at life.
Yep.
High fives.
Yep. I actually felt like I was failing in my own business when I saw this being promoted. It's an American event. I was in Newcastle and I'd done all these things. When I look back on my business plan, I had done them, but I'd started getting distracted by other people and other things, and I started to go, oh, things aren't working. And yeah, I saw this event and thought, oh, maybe I need a space to have this discussion, because I've also worked in the creative industries.
I was going to say, it's not like you've had a career failures. You've actually done quite a lot in reinvigorating the arts within Newcastle, where you come from.
Exactly. And it wasn't until I spoke to someone, I guess you would say, is like a mentor in some I respect, and I told her about all these things going on in my head that were my failures. And she just laughed and said, what are you talking about? You've got this, this, and this, and these things that you've done. And I'd realized that it was all about how I was thinking about what I didn't get done. Mm-hmm. And I sort of thought, maybe there are other people out there who, when they related to my story, it's these stories that I had that I thought were like reflections of how bad of a business person I was, or how silly of a mistake I thought to do this. And then I realized that the people I was putting on pedestals made similar, very similar mistakes. Maybe even worse ones.
Absolutely. Everyone mucks up.
Yeah.
No one really knows what they're doing.
That's right.
So
we're all sort of, they say that faking it until you make it thing. And that's where I realized we're all doing that a little bit. And I found that there were too many talks that were all about the winning and the wow. And like, I mean, I love those TED Talks and things like that, where you get that kind of motivational wow talks. But I also realized that there are so many bumps along the road to success.
Absolutely. And life can, all this stuff can get a bit Oprah after a while, can't it? And I don't mind. I love Oprah.
Me too.
But, you know, it's very hard to keep thinking that life's going to work out really well if you think positively, and you can do it. Sometimes it doesn't.
I know. And that constant, like, people where they say, just put the positivity out there and it will work and it will work. And you get those cliches of when things aren't working, and you're like, how many people can tell me another door opens, or a door closes, another window opens? Or, you know, how many times do I have to hear that? I know that it's true, but can we maybe just at least just embellish this feeling for a second that does exist?
Yeah.
And that was the kind of point in creating this space and crushing that stigma that's associated with fear, with failure, and that fear of failure.
Myth's Best Bits on Double J.
I reckon there's a lot of us who imagined wanting to be famous at 15, particularly in an all-girl rock and roll band, touring the world. I know I certainly did. I spent a lot of time in my bedroom singing into a hairbrush, stealing hairstyles and outfits from all my favourite rock and roll stars. Well, I'm very pleased to have a special guest in the Double J studios with me right now, someone who actually was famous at 15, touring the world with the likes of the Ramones, Blondie. There was mass hysteria in Japan when her band toured that she fronted. They were the Runaways, and Cherie Currie is in the Double J studios. Well, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I so appreciate it. You know what? You're not the only one that had sang into a hairbrush.
Who did you admire when you must have been much younger, because you started pretty young?
I did, yes. And I'm going to have to say, my goodness, I sang into a hairbrush with Suzy Quatro, David Bowie, you know, the Raspberries.
Oh, yeah.
Eric Carmen.
Fantastic.
All by myself. That was a real hairbrush moment for me. Yes.
But being famous at 15, I mean, I think a lot of people, if they are familiar with the Runaways, it was quite an explosion and things kind of went a little bit awry. How did you cope as a 15-year-old dealing with all of the things that came with fame, and maybe not necessarily fortune, but fame and exposure at such a young age?
Well, you know, we were kept so busy. If we weren't touring, we were recording, and if we weren't recording, we were rehearsing. I don't think we had a whole lot of time to think about it in the beginning, but towards the end, I think we really needed a mediator, somebody that would have come in and let us talk through our problems, because we stopped speaking.
Yeah.
And being that young, you know, 16, 17, and you're not talking to each other anymore, that was when and we were very tired also. We never had a break.
Yeah. And this was all because of your manager, Kim Fowley, who
That's true, yes.
was very much the kind of, he's painted as a Svengali, I guess, of the group, and with put a lot of pressure on you, didn't he, when you were quite young?
Well, you know, he knew what it was going to take to make it happen because he'd been doing it all of his life, and he'd been working with, he's worked with so many artists, big artists, and he knew that what we were doing hadn't been done before. And how do you prepare 15, 16, 17-year-old girls to go out on the road with no parental supervision whatsoever?
Yeah.
And no one to count on but each other. So he made if we could pass the Kim Fowley test, he knew we'd be able to get through the male-dominated industry of music at the time. And he was right.
What advice would you give that little 15-year-old now, having had the experiences that you've had and the life that you've had?
You know, I would give anybody, and regardless of your age, this advice. Don't ever ask people's opinions. Don't ask, don't take their advice. That's number one. Never take somebody's advice because you have your path. They can't walk your path and you can't walk theirs. So you giving them advice is a moot point because the thing is that you just have to listen to yourself and believe in yourself and listen to that little inner voice.
Cherie Curry, you had some difficult times. You went into acting after the band broke up and you created a group with your sister as well. And then for a while there, they were kind of sort of darker years for you. How did you get yourself out of that?
Well, it was kind of a moment of clarity for me back in 84 when, I'd been doing drugs since I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
It was kind of normal. Everybody, if you didn't do drugs, there seemed to be something wrong with you. I mean, that was the mentality at the time of the 70s. It was so accepted and so expected. So by 84, I knew I had a serious problem. I'd lost my career as an actor. I was unreliable. And I packed up and went home to my Aunt Evie's house.
Aww.
And I got off all that stuff and became a drug and alcohol counselor for drug addicted teens and a fitness trainer.
Wow.
And then I went on to get married to the wonderful actor Robert Hayes, who did, I guess you would know his movie Flying High, the
yes.
comedy from 1980.
Yeah.
And we have a beautiful son who's 25 now. He actually produced my album with Kim Fowley, Reverie.
Every time I do a Google search of your name, Cherie Curry, something about a chainsaw comes up. What on earth is this? I've not heard of it before.
Well, you should because you've got a lot of champion chainsaw artists here in Australia because I competed against them in 2005.
Now, what is a chainsaw artist?
You pick up, you get a big log and you get a chainsaw and you make mermaids and dolphins and seals or what? I mean, my specialty is mermaids and sea life.
Right.
But, you know, bears. I think that's the first thing you would think of is, you know, a chainsawed bear.
It doesn't look easy to do, though. Like, you need some skill and talent. How long have you been working at this?
I've been doing it 15 years.
And they have championships?
Oh, they've got competitions just all over the world.
Whoa, show us your arms. I bet you've got great guns.
Actually, I had to take about a year off, but I did carve the other day in New Zealand.
Oh, how are you feeling today?
Good.
That's great.
Really good.
So it's a great workout as well as a creative outlet.
It truly is a great workout, and I'm looking forward to getting back and getting back into it full time.
catch up with Miff Warhurst for lunch. Weekdays from 11 on Double J.